Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome to the Big Interview Q&A show for January. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are Graeme Hunter, host of The Big Interview, and our guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/Graeme Hunter. We want to say a big welcome to three new socios, Daniel Cheney, John Campbell, James Cosgrove. This show goes out to you guys. Thanks for joining up. Boys, given that the transfer window is counting down as we speak, I thought we'd start with something relevant to that. This is a question from Joe on Twitter, who says, "Why do most Premier League clubs seem reluctant to buy La Liga talent? I watched Alex Moreno in August at Betis v Elche, and it was obvious he would be a top signing for any Premier League outfit. At the price Villa paid, what a signing." So Joe's obviously referring to Villa's signing of Alex Moreno from Betis earlier this month for just over $13 million, I believe. Graeme, I don't know, maybe you could talk a little bit about Moreno, but also maybe whether you agree that there is a reluctance by English clubs to shop in the Spanish market.
Well, the answer, Joe, is yes, no. I have always enjoyed watching Moreno play. I didn't really catch up with him properly until he was at Rayo. And at Betis, I initially didn't enjoy his conversion to wing back. Yeah, he always had that capacity of full back. I just thought that one of the problems was that he was completely unconditioned mentally to what he should be doing positionally. Now, clearly, for the last season and a half, maybe two, certainly under Pellegrini, he's changed. He's changed dramatically. He became far less regularly in positions whereby, I think most particularly, he'd either pushed forward at the wrong time or failed to track back quickly enough. But he was also somebody who wasn't conditioned to looking across the line if either as a left back or a wing back, as a full back or a wing back, he was supposed to be either wary of a striker's movement or they were playing a high offside line. And it's taken an enormous amount of teaching for him to now become a much more complete player. I think he's turned 30, and the gifts are obvious, Joe. I think neither Pete nor Martin and I need to go, because you were impressed when you saw him playing, but the gifts have always been there, whether he was playing as a winger or a defender, because he's technically, he's got a lovely delivery of the ball. He's gifted in terms of attacking vision, and he's pretty quick. So it's been a voyage of discovery for me across the latter two thirds of his career, particularly once he was converted to that position. And I still wonder. No, one of the things that will make him a success in the Premier League is that he's working for a coach who really understands how to make players aware of their, not just their defensive responsibilities, but their positional responsibility vis-a-vis the guy who's inside them, outside them, in front of them, behind them. I've watched Unai Emery's training, and by the way, at Villa, they're stunned, but it's funny to keep, you know, preaching this gospel, but The work ethic, for example, the intensity of work ethic. We talk about the Premier League as a really intense league because of what we watch on the pitch. But Unai Emery has brought a completely new work culture to Aston Villa, whereby he and his team are in at 7 and are there at least till 7 or 8. There's a regular spurge of 12-hour days during which the intensity of work, not just for the players, for everybody, is raising eyebrows in a positive way. And therefore, Moreno is going to be... He's going to continue the education that Pellegrini has gifted him. And I suppose it's sad that he's only become complete at a later stage in his career, because the ability was always there. And the answer, Joe, about... I take a completely different view to you. I hate the way that La Liga is constantly plundered by the Premier League. And if the fundament of your question is the Premier League still pound for pound compared to the resources they have, the money they have, and the influx of advanced continental thinking that has been transfused into England at every level, whether it's recuperation, director of football, coaching, playing, there's been an utter transformation of the English Premier League in the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years even, maybe even longer, which is to its great advancement. But nonetheless, I still think that there are flaws in the scouting across the large majority of the teams, and I'd far rather they shopped a lot less in La Liga.
Yeah, the real gift for Villa fans with Moreno is that he's been, as Graham says, under Pellegrini for the last couple of seasons. Because if you go back a little bit, he was a defensive liability. People forget with Pellegrini, because his teams play such attractive football, they forget that he was a centre-back, Pellegrini, a long, 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 long time ago. And so he has that sort of defensive mindset, and he makes players into better defenders, and he's certainly done that with Alex Moreno. And Emery obviously will build on that, and Emery will be in his ear, or probably has been in his ear, with the proximity on the pitch to the fullback and the technical area. It can't be easy with Emery, but you get the benefits because he's such a brilliant coach. Joe, that's not the view here at all, that the Premier League doesn't look to Spain. And there's fear in every transfer window that, as Graham said, it's going to be absolutely plundered. And I think Villa wanted a winger as well. I don't know whether you've since bought one, but I know there was a lot of interest in Luis Enrique, who's having an incredible season at Betis. There was an offer, I think, for Nico Williams, and in the end he didn't want to leave. So, you know, there's real fear that, you know, the Premier League can just come in. And also what catches the eye here is that it's clubs often towards the tail end of the Premier League who come in and can take players and managers away from clubs who are fighting for European football at the top end of the Spanish League. So it's grim here, and everyone breathes a sigh of relief when the window shuts, and we'll do this week.
Here's another question on another La Liga export from Socio Robert Ryan. He says, Casemiro, what a difference he's made to United. Some doubted the signing, but I write this post-Reading match where he scored 2. He says, fair dues to Real Madrid. Perhaps they felt he'd done everything he could at the club and would let him go to a new challenge, but are they missing him? So, Graham, this is an interesting one, because you actually recorded an episode on Casemiro when he first signed for United, and I think we're planning to go back and maybe do a follow-up recording ahead of the United-Barca Europa League tie next month. But it's quite an interesting from the Madrid side of it. You know, obviously, 0-0 draw last night with Real Sociedad, so they're now 5 points behind Barcelona in La Liga. What has his absence been keenly felt, do you think?
My point when we recorded that, and when Pete and I were asked repeatedly on radio or on La Liga television, my point was, overall, my suspicion was that Real Madrid might be costed the league because of his absence. And that has to be explained by ripples in a pond, in that it's not simply when you're a club with the riches of squad that Real Madrid have, and the quality of coach and the attitude. It's not one player going that caused me to suggest that it was going to be a massive handicap for them. It was the fact that he specifically allowed Kroos and Modric to play in different ways, to exaggerate or highlight the things they do best, and he you know, Elastoplast, the things that they didn't necessarily do very well. He's both extremely intelligent and extremely cynical. He was, particularly in England, majorly underestimated factor in this winning mentality that Real Madrid have, that was probably in my lifetime, or certainly in my the lifetime of my memory of Spanish football, as much as Real Madrid is the club of remontadas, the fight backs and the Juanito spirit, I genuinely don't believe that in Real Madrid's modern history, possibly ever, there were three such extreme fight backs as the ones against Paris Saint-Germain's second leg, particularly the City game at home. And it's not a fight back, but Chelsea away was a magnificent performance, I think, in the times when, you know, they weren't being pushed around by Chelsea, which is the top and tail of the game. And then the latter half of the Chelsea game, when it looked like they were out and they were being pummeled and they should have gone out, Casemiro was utterly central to all that. And it's because you can talk about positioning and you can talk about stats and you can talk about passes and goals, to transmit what a man or a woman in female football like that gives to your day-to-day, to encapsulate that and convince people about that, because it can just sound like adjectives. And there are people in our profession, I think, who misuse the key adjectives about attitude, professionalism, hunger, street smarts, drive. And Casemiro is exemplary. One of the key things I said, and the massive disappointment I had, was personal, was selfish, because I used the phrase that every game, every single game watching Casemiro was an education. And as much as I'm thrilled for him that he's doing well, and as much as I was wrong that he wouldn't be able to make a telling impact in a Manchester United side, which I thought was adrift, it's pleasing to see that was wide of the mark now, because the overall momentum of the club's daily work has changed, not only since Cristiano was booted out, but while Erik ten Hag was winning the battle for who was in charge on a daily basis. So Casemiro, to me, Roberto, is just a fascinating player who's lit up, people speak for himself, but I'm going to say our time in Spain. And bloody hell, I still miss him, and I wish he was playing anywhere in this league. I don't care.
Yeah, I miss him too. And we all of us that work here and were asked to comment or write about him when he made the move, did point out that, you know, that you're not signing a clogger, you're not signing just someone who's just going to mind sweep in front of the defence. He's extremely talented football, and he'll get goals and he'll play final balls that help United, and no one's surprised here that he's been successful. In terms of it being the reason why Real Madrid might not win the league, I don't think it is. I think the reason why Madrid are 5 points shy at the moment and why they might not catch Barcelona is they don't have a substitute number nine. They were crying out last night to bring on a number nine and play Benzema off the nine with Rodrigo one side, Vinicius the other side, to go and get the late goal. And it's criminal neglect in terms of their squad building that they've allowed Mariano to just hang around in the background, and he can't be used, he can't be played, and they do not have someone who can, you know, play the odd game to rest Benzema, and also come on with 20 minutes left and play in front of him and just give them something different. I think that's what they're missing more than the Casemiro position, even with Tchouaméni injured at the moment. But yeah, no one's surprised. And I'm pleased that Casemiro's enjoying himself and you know, having that career in the Premier League. He could have easily just seen out his time at Real Madrid. I'd like to see him win something at United. I'd be pleased, and like Graham, I miss him.
Here's just a quick one before the break from Joe again on Twitter. He says, I'm interested about the role of Nacho at Real Madrid and how high up he ranks on the most underrated elite players in football. Yet again, he was brought in to start right back due to injuries at San Mames, and he did what Nacho always does, a quality, reliable, committed performance. So maybe, Pete, you could take this one on. Do you see Nacho as a bit of an unsung hero?
Well, in the spirit of Casemiro, actually, last night, he escaped a red card. He stuck his hand in front of a throw-in and he'd already been booked, and he admitted after the game, you know, I don't know why I did that exactly, but I'm pleased to have got away with it. He is hugely underrated. The expensive defenders come in and they play ahead of him, but in the end, sooner or later, they always have to rely on Nacho. I'm trying to think, there was a season a couple of seasons ago they won the league and Nacho got the only goal of the game at Valladolid. That's the kind of thing he does, and you know, if it does go to the wire this season and Madrid do win it with a single goal, you know, it might go in off Nacho's backside. He's reliable in that sense, but he's also a very, very good footballer. We've said this before. He's played at international level as a fullback. He can do the things that an attacking fullback can do, as well as being, as Ancelotti always calls him, his pessimistic defender, always thinking the worst is going to happen and always being ready for it. He's a great player for them to have, and they'd be mad not to give him some sort of deal that's going to keep him happy and keep him at the club at the end of the season.
Martin, he unites. This is no longer a La Liga or a Real Madrid question. He unites football. Because everybody who's ever supported a club, whether it's an amateur, semi-pro or pro level, knows the player who you're like, yeah, we count on him. He's our man. It's as if I was playing out there. He carries all our hopes and dreams. He's aggressive. He's always fit. He absolutely loves the badge. So, you know, it's a happy coincidence that he's come through the factory, the youth system, and he was once a Mirlo. Look at those wonderful white... birds is effectively what Mirlo means. But you talk about the guy who bleeds for the shirt, for whom the badge means everything, and the modern game is eradicating people like that. So long live Nacho.
Okay, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part one of this month's Q&A.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back with a question from Socio Andy Cochran. Andy says, what are the odds of Barca winning the league this season? Surely this current run is unsustainable. Now, we do have another question from Socio Tom Lee on Barca, which looks ahead to the Europa League tie, but we're going to cover that in next month's Q&A. Just to say, Barca are now 5 points clear, kind of getting the job done. Last three results have been 1-0 wins. Graham, I think just before we started recording, I caught a quick exchange I had with Pete where you sounded like far from convinced about Barca's current form, so maybe you can kick us off here.
Yeah, but there's a couple of ways to look at Andy's question. You're right in that, you know, Pete was on commentary for Barca playing at Girona and what, you know, people have started calling a derby match. I think it's not, but there you go. Two Catalan sides. What I thought at the weekend was that Barcelona looked very flat and predictable, and while Girona excelled and they played their part in the equation, one, in terms of Oriol Romeu was an absolute tower, and two, every man in Michel's team believed that they could contain Barcelona. Three, it's unusual for Xavi to say this, but he said we were caught out by their playing idea, and therefore the tactical niceties that Girona introduced with a weak free, you know, to train and to plan and to get right, they'd used well, and therefore undoubtedly credit to them. But in terms of facing a team like that, who's, we have to be blunt about it, whose resources are, you know, significantly different to Barcelona. Even if Barcelona are being outthought or contained or out-hustled, you look for ingenuity, you look for patterns of play, you look for wit, and you look for superior talent to come through in terms of the mentality of this is how we unpick them. And not a lot of that was available. And when the goal goes in, Ansu's ball to Alba, and Alba's cross is really nice. It forces the Argentina Gazzaniga to make an uncomfortable save, which allows Pedri to score. Fine. But the Andy's point about, he used a word there that's the key, unsustainable. Because, you know, across the season, you talked about the last few results being 1-0s. But if you go back to Valencia, if you go back to Mallorca, 1-0 wins there, nothing against Rayo in the first game of the match. A couple of single goal wins that weren't 1-0. They continuously look as if they're going to concede and then they don't. I think they're at, I don't know how many goals they're at now in the league. Is it 7 maybe? And that they've conceded 6. Still only 6. 6 goals conceded. There won't be a leading team anywhere across Europe that's conceded that few. And in my view, it should be, you know, maybe not 26, but, you know, they should be up around 18, 19 goals conceded on chances missed, on big saves from Ter Stegen, given last-minute interceptions, particularly by Araujo. And they're, what have they conceded in the other two competitions? You know, it's veering towards 2 goals a game conceded in the other two competitions. And therefore, it's unsustainable that they keep on pulling out 1-0 results, I think, because there will be a moment when a rival cracks them and confidence drops, where other rivals go tuck chances away like a ripple effect. But in terms of winning La Liga, there's so little to choose between the leading two, and it's a two-way race, because I don't think there's a contender that has the squad or the goals to take the title away from either Madrid or Barcelona this season, although La Real have proven this week that they're getting closer and closer. With 11 men out, they merited a draw against Real Madrid last night, if not necessarily on shared chances. The quality of their play and losing 1-0 with 10 men at Camp Nou in the Cup and then drawing 0-0 at Madrid this week should make everybody associated with Real Sociedad really, really proud. So Andy said unsustainable. I agree that throughout this season and when Manchester United come calling, I think that can be a little jar of cold water on them. But might they win the league? And it's not just because of the 5-point gap. There's a ferocity and a remorselessness about the squad attitude that is just above where Real Madrid are at the moment, and therefore they might win it, Andy, but boy, the way they're playing, it needs an upgrade. They need to play the brand of football they did in the Supercopa against Real Madrid.
I think it is sustainable. I think it's sustainable because Ter Stegen's having probably his best season since he's been at the club. And he's a major reason why, by the way, why it's 6 goals conceded, because particularly earlier in the season, defensively, they weren't great and they were conceding a lot of chances and he was keeping them out. I was on comms with Andrea Orlandi on Saturday, and he said that Ronald Araujo is the best in the world in terms of one-to-one defending. And I think he might have a point there. So if Araujo stays fit as well, I think that's another major thing in their favour. Pedri's 100th game against Girona, and he got his 15th goal. And I looked up how many Andres Iniesta. I know these comparisons are daft, but you know, obviously we all see something of Iniesta in Pedri. And I looked up how many goals Iniesta had scored in his first 100 games, 5. Pedri's really adding goals to his game and starting to look like someone who who the further forward he plays and the closer he is off a front man, the more fantastic player he's going to be and become. I think it's hugely impressive that they miss Robert Lewandowski for three games and they win those three games. Okay, so they win each one 1-0. I think they're showing a character and an ability to scrap that wasn't there before, and they showed it again against Girona at the weekend. Girona, by the way, have got a couple of players who wouldn't go amiss in the Barcelona squad. Romeo, Graham mentioned, and also Arnau Martinez. I think they both get plenty of minutes at where they at Barca. But I think as things stand, I think Barca are favourites, and I think they can maintain this. I think this is how teams win leagues, isn't it? It's not how Barca normally win leagues, but if they're going to do it, I wouldn't say the Atletico Madrid way, but 1-0 to Barcelona.
Okay, the next question is from Socio Chris Hennigan. Hi, Graeme and Pete. I would be really interested for your thoughts on the current crop of young, up-and-coming Spanish managers in La Liga. The job Arrasate is doing at Osasuna seems to fly under the radar, while Iraola may be more lauded given the administrative mess that is Rayo Vallecano off the field. His brand of heavy metal football can be a joy to behold. Finally, many were surprised when Diego Martinez pitched up at Espanyol, and although they languish at the bottom half of the table, you can at least see some of the ideas he's trying to implement in the football he wants to play. Personally, I'd rather they stayed in La Liga, but do you see any of the above moving to the more celebrated clubs in Spain or overseas in the near future? So that's a really good question from Chris. Obviously, three name check there. Do you think we're looking at a batch maybe of young Spanish managers here that are going to go on to greater things?
I think we can go on Nigella Lawson here, can't we? Because it's about slow cooking. One of the things in this country is that there's a deep, deep rooted culture, and has been for a long time, about how you train coaches and what type of people want to become coaches. Coaching in the community, coaching women's football, coaching youth football. It's regarded right across the country as a laudable, important thing to do, to coach, to teach, rather than to coach, to teach in order to become a superstar and earn millions. Now, clearly, many of the people that are involved in the elite game want to go on to coach to earn high salaries, to win trophies. For the longest time, there's been a vast number of coaches, more in Spain across professional football than, for example, in the UK where Chris is. And that leads to a culture, that leads to refinement of ideas, that leads to much more openness of sharing of ideas. The language culture here allows access to France and Italy and South America much more easily. For a far longer time, people here were growing up watching the influence of Italian or South American players or coaches in this country. And therefore, I think that while English football in particular, and in some years in our lives, Scottish football was very successful in European terms, gradually they were overtaken. And I think, it's been a long stew, the fact that you can so regularly see tactically excellent coaches in Spain who are also very good at demonstrating and coaching. There are far fewer managers in Spain. The concept of somebody who came in and was a sergeant major or a Brian Clough style guru leader, it wasn't unknown, but it just wasn't a central part of the way in which Britain for a long time struggled to get rid of in football, in elite football, the army concept, the sergeant major concept. You will just do what you're told, don't bother thinking about it, or the public school culture about here is the hierarchy and you'll do exactly as you're told. And therefore, footballers in Spain grew up, slow cooking analogy, stewing in a lot of ideas, a lot of discussions about why they were taught a lot rather than ordered. So, I think for years you get people of, acuity, like Unai or Rafa Benitez or Monchi in his role that are you know, different from the types of talent that come through in the UK, which have been exceptional and who have excelled, but who generally are discernibly different. And Chris talked about three there. I don't know, I'll nick one and Pete can nick two, but for my taste, who were the three? Arasati, Diego Martinez and Iraola. Well, let's go to Arasati. Arasati is interesting because at Real Sociedad, because he had, you know, he was a school teacher, and because he hadn't really had any elite experience, he had hauled himself up by the bootstraps in terms of he had to exist purely on his coaching know-how. He was sneered at. And he didn't last long enough, having come through the, you know, the academy coaching system at La Real. He even in this culture, there was a refute. There was just a teacher. A phrase that gets used a lot around the Scottish Football Association and the SFA coaching badges. But even though he showed and flared at Real Sociedad, when you saw what he was doing, I was lucky enough for a combination of reasons to see quite a lot of his matches at Numancia. And it was, look at the way he's absolutely made this team into his image, the quality of football they play, irrespective of having, you know, a turnover of 15 players in and 17 players out in a summertime. Was evident preparation for what he's doing at Osasuna, where he's got a board that adore him, a smart ex-footballer, director of football in Braulio, whereby time and time again they've said, it's not that there's been real hardship under Arasati's coaching, but they've said, we are in this to build, we are in this for the long term, for development, we like your ideas, we trust in you. Now, there have been a couple of bumpy moments, but nothing that would make you say, well, it's miraculous that they didn't sack him, none of that. But they've been such a rarity in football terms. They've said to him, here is the project, here is how we'll resource you, this is what we want you to do with youth football, which again, it has been prodigious at Osasuna, I think, and that it's helped him that he had an experience in that at Zubieta Real Sociedad. And I don't think he's destined to become one of these coaches who gets plucked and takes over one of the grand sides and everybody goes, yeah, all along we knew he was fit for this Champions League team. But I think that when a club like Osasuna, or maybe them themselves, has more money, has a better squad, he's a guy who could he's easily tactically good enough to be able to take a Spanish side to the heights in the Europa League. And I hope it's Osasuna, but I think that whatever happens to him in the next stage of his career, it's not a combination of he's at a brilliant era at club and the players are world class. He's been the potent element which has helped Osasuna play better, sign better, promote better from the youth and have a really clear playing identity, which another benefit is totally in tune with what the local support want to see.
Yeah, to pick up on the other two, if I was José Ángel Sánchez, who presumably is still the kingmaker at Real Madrid, I would be in Florentino Perez's ear telling him that Andoni Iraola should be on the list to replace Carlo Ancelotti. Be that at the end of this season or whenever, it probably will be the end of this season. I think he's fantastic. I think we all expected him maybe to go at the end of last season because, you know, what more could they do? How much further could they push it on? They weren't really going to be able to strengthen too much in the summer. He stayed on. They're just as good to watch this season. It's not just good football. They get results as well, flirting around the European places. It's a minor miracle when you think of the resources and the incompetence to actually run the club. I think he's going to go very, very far, and hopefully that will be in Spain, and if not, it'll be elsewhere. I really rate Diego Martinez. I think there will be patience with him at Espanyol, because I think there's enough football now there to know that they've got a very, very good manager, maybe a better manager than in terms of where they are as a club, that they perhaps deserve, if that's probably not the right word. So I think they'll stick with him, and I think he'll get that right. And, you know, he also, I think, is destined for greater things. The timing was off with Sevilla. If he'd just hung on, he probably would have got the Sevilla job when Julian Lopetegui left. And just to back up what Graham says about Arrasate, he's done a fantastic job. But I do think it's the ecosystem there. I think it's Braulio. I think it's the patience at the club. I think two seasons ago when they had a run of 12 without a win and they stuck with him. He's very much of that sort of environment. But I think you could take the other two out of their current environments and they would tear up the trees wherever they go. So I think they're big things can be expected of both those managers.
OK, this is Socio Aaron Duckling says, "Hi, G and Pete, thanks as always for all you do. A lot has been made of La Liga's approach to enforcing financial prudence on its clubs and the impact on retention and attraction of talent. As this seems set to stay, how do you think clubs will or should react? Ongoing trust and investment in youth, or more targeted scouting and recruitment from low-cost markets? For example, similar to the influx of Japanese talent into the Scottish Premier League. Is there an opportunity there for some clubs to navigate this better than others and establish themselves?" So, quite an interesting question here from Aaron. The requirement for greater financial prudence, is it clever scouting? Is it youth development? Is it a bit of both? And who's going to be the kind of beneficiaries, if you like?
First of all, Aaron, thanks for so much friendship and loyalty. Nice to hear from you again. Thanks to all of you who've been listening to us for so long and prompting us, helping us with questions to interview guests and to this Q&A. I think that just because Javier Tebas and La Liga with their financial fair play seem completely out of step with the rest of Europe, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. For as long as I can remember, many Spanish football clubs have been teetering on the brink of financial collapse. I think you have to be a forensic accountant in order to be absolutely crystal clear that the methods applied right now are going to be successful, are correctly calibrated, because I think that's one of the central points about, okay, a mechanism, a braking system in order to prevent clubs spending their way out of trouble and the football trouble and then finding themselves in deep financial trouble. I think there's a general acceptance, not just in Spain but across European football, that some harness structure like that is intelligent. It's about calibrating it and what's fair, what's workable, what's sustainable, and what will allow a check and balance but also allow nutrition for football to be competitive in Europe and entertaining to its punters. At the moment, I genuinely believe, Aaron, that we're watching and learning about FFP. It's never been more dominant than right now. And you see a cohesion with Martin. Who asked us about transfers? I think it was Joe. And Aaron, you know that dovetails in that we look at Villarreal feeling that they had to get rid of Nico Jackson and Arno Danjuma. Danjuma for slightly separate reasons, but Moreno out at Betis. It's about book balancing. It's about ability to recontract players you want to renew, whose contracts you want to renew. It's about the preparation for the summertime and who they want to sign. And therefore, La Liga being plundered will inevitably continue or gather speed, the greater degree to which FFP impacts. But is FFP the problem there, or has it been the club's overspending? So there's your, you know, if you close the fridge door, does the light go out or not? There's your, you know, just chew away at that one as long as you want to. But the answer is yes. Having lived inside a fridge as a student, when I was a little short of cash, I can assure you it does. And when we get on to trees falling in the forest, that's a whole episode. But in terms of my absolute wish is that more and more teams promote their youth. We've seen a real outbreak of it at the moment. It will not be a blanket tactic because, you know, at clubs like, for example, Real Madrid, where they believe, and there's been substantial proof over my lifetime, that they have to have superstars, which doesn't seem to be a bad way to progress. And Atleti, for as long as they've got Cholo Simeone, for example, it's not really about youth. But I think in almost every other club, it will increasingly be so. And in terms of your point about investing in markets that are lesser known, I like the way in which Brighton have now data-driven overtaken the traditional brilliance of Spain in searching in lesser-known South American markets. I think that's a wake-up call. So it might not be what you wanted to hear, Aaron, but I think a balanced approach across 98% of the clubs in the Liga between better, more accurate, more data-driven scouting, which mimics the way that Brentford, to a degree, but certainly Brighton, have excelled, absolutely excelled. There's players right across Brighton's squad right now that never mind whether, in fact, they wouldn't, you know, the big clubs in England would have spotted them first, because that's just not the case, who should be in La Liga, who should, judging on the balance of what the three of us have learned here, Aaron, over our involvement with La Liga, you know, you should have seen Matoma, you should have seen Alexis, you should have seen Caicedo coming through in La Liga first, but they didn't, because La Liga's clubs are now being beaten. So I think your point is good, that greater acuity of where they're going and why they're signing players in Spain will be a result of FFP.
Yeah, there's an easy way for Spain to get beyond this financial disadvantage that they have with the Premier League, and that's Real Madrid and Barcelona to open the doors to foreign investors and stop being fan owned clubs. But we don't want that. I think one of the great things about La Liga is that it hasn't sold its soul in the way that other leagues have done. And it's great to see the last four in the Spanish Cup, and I think the draws this morning, are all other four fan owned clubs in Spain. We have to just get on with it. There is a financial disadvantage. The Premier League will come in and will pick players off. By the way, I think there was a late U-turn, Graham. And as we speak, he's stayed. I mean, if he does go to the Premier League, please, whatever team signs him, please, you know, give him a song based on the Johnny Cash Jackson song. There isn't the wit to do that here, or maybe it's, in fairness, they're probably not aware of that particular Johnny Cash number. But
we've been talking about Jackson ever since the hamstring popped. I'm not going with Jackson.
Exactly, that sort of thing, Graham. There is one thing I wish clubs would do a little bit better, and that's get a season or two out of the brilliant young player before you sell him. And I don't know what's going to happen with Fresneda. Is he gone yet, Graham, or is he still at Valladolid as we're recording this?
The last I heard is that terms have been agreed with his agent with two clubs, which I think one is Dortmund, and I think the other one is in England, but nobody's made Valladolid convinced enough that this excellent-looking young fullback should go.
So, I mean, Fresneda's played about 10 games, and it would just be nice to see him have a couple of good seasons at Valladolid, and then cash in on him. And I think I remember the same happening with Ferran Torres at Valencia. And no wonder the Valencia fans are fed up with so many different things. But I think one of them is the fact that these players leave and they don't even get a decent couple of seasons out of them. So I think that is something that could be improved. But I agree with Graham that just because La Liga is the only league at the moment with this strict FFP, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're in the wrong. I think they're in the right.
Okay, here's just a quick fire one to finish part one of this month's Q&A. Joe on Twitter, how does Vinicius not place top three in the Ballon d'Or 2022? He says, if Mbappe had achieved what Vinicius had across last season, from his goals and assists to secure the title win to his heroics in the Champions League, what is it that stops him getting the praise he deserves? He's criminally underappreciated. And I'll just throw in Terry Hassett on Twitter as well, who says, is there any possibility that players like Vinicius will decide they've had enough moronic abuse and look for a move? So kind of two aspects to Vinicius here, criminally underappreciated, and I guess Terry's asking, you know, will he be hounded out of Spain ultimately?
I'll dive in and I'll say, could I have seen a situation where it was Vinicius in the top three instead of Sadio Mane? Yes. He was eighth. I think that the top ten doesn't look too bad with Benzema, Mane, De Bruyne, Lewandowski, Mohamed Salah, Mbappe, Courtois, Vinicius, Luka Modric and Erling Haaland. I think the theme that's been mentioned there is true, that Vinicius was initially under-analysed, under-appreciated. He became a bit of a whipping boy. I think at the moment he's unquestionably in the horns of a dilemma because he's misbehaving. He's having the football version of his terrible twos. He hasn't got the Casemiro balance right about how to be devious and get away with it. Yet, it's also true that the treatment of him in the pitch, and I go back to two games against Mallorca where I thought it was criminal, but the treatment on the pitch is that everybody is looking to provoke him, everybody's looking to trip him. He's the most foul. So before this round of games, I don't know the stats, he was the most fouled player in Europe's top five leagues. That will bring a reaction, and you know, above all, you know, without any exception, the racist abuse that we know he gets, and the racist abuse that he keeps saying he gets, which is the stuff that we can't always be aware of, is criminal, is on the rise, and whether that would ever force him out of Real Madrid is such a hypothetical question, because he's very, very happy there. They need footballers like him. I think they'll fight to make sure that he's happy there. And how do you eradicate, you know, the abuse of outright morons?
Yeah, he was sensational last night. I mean, there are about seven or eight players on the pitch who was sensational. It was an incredible game last night. I think and I hope that the mannequin that was hung off the bridge before the derby and the cup is a sort of tipping point, and it kind of opened people's eyes to the fact that, you know, this is going too far, and it is not, because there are still some people of the opinion in Spain that this is just banter, you know. It's, and I think that maybe woke, I hope it woke more people up to the fact that this is way beyond that. And I think it could. I think if it was allowed to go on unchecked, and if he felt that he wasn't getting the support from the club and from his teammates, which at certain times in this season has been the case, that he hasn't been backed up by his teammates on the pitch when certain incidents have happened, and also by the club when certain things have been said, I think he might think, you know, maybe that this is more trouble than it's worth, and I would be better protected in another league. And in turn, that hopefully will contribute to Spain waking up to the fact that, you know, it has to take a tougher stand. And he himself, I think, the statement he made after the mannequin and the off the bridge disgrace in last midweek was that, yeah, a lot of people are saying it's terrible, but I want action. I want things to actually be done and people to be punished. And that obviously is what needs to happen.
Okay, that's it for part one of this month's Q&A. We'll be back tomorrow with more from Pete and Graham. Thank you to the socios for sending questions, and thank you to everyone for listening. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.